You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Let's clear out winter and clean up the lawn with Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. Right now, get the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and make your lawn work easier with a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power. And with convenient online shopping, you can order on the app, pick up in store, and get outside sooner. Get your yard spring ready with the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower, now just $89 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
You've done all the Harry Potter.
Guilty as charged, yes. My agent had read it and said, there's a children's book and they'd like you to do it for an audio. And I said, okay, thinking, you know, that's about half a day's job, isn't it? The cat looked at the dog looked at the cat. It was nice, the end. And that's a children's book. What could be better? It turned out to be a full novel length, but I started reading it and I thought, this is rather good. So I agreed to do it. And I turned up and there was Joe Rowling, and she likes to remind me of this. I said, you know, I think this is just wonderful. People are going to love it. It's such a great thing. She said, well, I have to tell you, I've already written the second one and it's going to be published in 2 months. And I said, good for you.
Good for you.
Yeah,
keep on writing.
Why not? You never know. You might get lucky.
Oh my God.
Hello, I'm Minnie Driver, and welcome to Mini Questions. I've always loved Proust's questionnaire. It was originally an 18th century parlor game meant to reveal an individual's true nature. But with so many questions, there wasn't really an opportunity to expand on anything. So I took the format of Proust's questionnaire and adapted what I think are 7 of the most important questions you could ever ask someone. They are, when and where were you happiest? What is the quality you like least about yourself? What relationship, real or fictionalized, defines love for you? What question would you most like answered? What person, place, or experience has shaped you the most? What would be your last meal? And can you tell me something in your life that has grown out of a personal disaster? The more people we ask, the more we begin to see what makes us similar and what makes us individual. I've gathered a group of really remarkable people who I'm honored and humbled to have had a chance to engage with. My guest today is author, actor, director, and broadcaster, intellectual explorer of rare talent, Stephen Fry. I grew up watching Stephen in the two genius British comedy series Blackadder and his show with Hugh Laurie, A Bit of Fry and Laurie. But he's also memorably played in his Golden Globe-nominated role as Oscar Wilde in the 1997 movie Wilde. And he's been in numerous other fantastic films like Gosford Park and A Fish Called Wanda. He's fearlessly explored his own experience with bipolar disorder in the documentary The Secret Life of a Manic Depressive. And since 2011, has served as the president of the mental health charity Mind. Stephen is a prolific writer to boot, and has 4 novels and 3 autobiographies in print.
I was completely transported by our conversation. Talking to him is like trying to keep up with a shooting star. We talked about everything from Sherlock Holmes to Amazonian tree frogs to the time he went to prison for credit card theft. This is the first half of a wonderful two-part episode. When I was thinking about the questions, because I really love Proust's questionnaire. Mm. I've always loved it. I've always loved listening to people's different answers.
They do one in Vanity Fair, don't they?
That might have been where I first discovered it. And then I went back and read his sort of full narrative and then some really fantastically Victorian responses. I chose Where and When You Were Happiest as the first question, largely because we put such a premium on being happy. But I also think that happiness, maybe it's just from where I sit at 51, it includes so much. It's the balance to everything. So when I ask that question, I mean it as largely as you can conceive it, really.
Yes. Well, I remember there was a time a few years ago, maybe 20, when I was desperately trying to give up smoking and all kinds of other things. And I looked into this thing called neuro-linguistic programming. I'm sure you're aware of it. It's a grand title for a way of making your mind obey your will, if you like. You want to do something like giving up smoking, but something's getting in the way, both physical addiction, of course, and something else. We're all familiar with that. It's not easy to will, but it's easy to will to will. In other words, you want something,
yes.
but it's very hard for it. Anyway, neuro-linguistic programming, one of the things they do is they ask you to remember a time, just a snapshot in your memory, when you know you were just unbounded in your happiness. You think of something, a sunny day on the beach or in a park. It may be that you were very young, so your mother's let you skip along to buy an ice cream, and you're looking down at the ducks with your brother, and everybody's with you, and you're content. You then do something physical, like pull at your earlobe, while enjoying that memory, and you keep twisting your ear muscle. And you do that several times, until the idea being, all you have to do is twist your earlobe, and you will get that memory. And I have to say, I still think to that moment in a park with an ice cream, and I can get what feels on the inside to be a beatific smile to spread across my face, and I remember happiness. And anyway, that's a thing. It's an exercise you do.
So if ever I see you twisting your earlobe at a party, I'll know that you're secretly about the ducks and the ice cream.
Exactly. And the idea is you do that when you want a cigarette or you want something,
brilliant,
you know, because it fills you with the happiness, possibly even with the self-supplied drugs, you know, the noradrenaline, the serotonin, the melatonin, all et cetera, the endorphins and all that. And maybe it does work, but that was an interesting time. But of course, that's a snapshot. It's a vertical moment of happiness, one little drop of bliss. But I would say probably, and this only works looking back, because at the time you're young, and when you're young, you're never happy. You're always angst-ridden or wanting to be better looking or wanting to take someone to bed or wanting to be asked to go to bed or you know, just not feeling clever enough or confident, all the rest of it. But those 3 years I had at university, and particularly the last year when Hugh Laurie became my best friend and we started writing comedy and realizing that we were doing something that gave others pleasure. We could hear the laughter and we felt just charged with optimism and it was justified, you know, because we were very lucky. And, you know, with me and Hugh and Emma Thompson and Tony Slattery, our year at university.
It was a great Footlights collection, I mean, honestly.
I still have to pinch myself to realise that, but for all kinds of extraordinary provisional contingent things, it might never have happened. I might have been a year earlier or 2 years earlier or never have got there, and who knows.
Did Rowan Atkinson go to Cambridge?
He went to the other place.
Oh, he went to the other place. We'll not mention that.
But I'll tell you a scene which was one of the happiest moments of my life was we were performing our review in Edinburgh It happened to be that year in Edinburgh, 81, was the first year of a new award called the Perrier Award, which was going to be given to supposedly the best comedy show on the fringe, or at least what the judges thought was the best. One thing we were certain of is that they wouldn't give it to Boo, Cambridge, Nair, snobs, you know, all the horror of that. But anyway, we were doing the show and we finished it and we bowed and there was cheers and applause and all the things that you live for. And then suddenly the applause went wild while we were bowing. And I saw people looking what I thought behind me. So I turned round and there was this figure, Rowan Atkinson, standing at the back of the stage on our show. Now, he was already a household name because Not the 9 o'clock News had I think, had done two series already and was a huge hit. And he was holding something and he came forward, ladies and gentlemen, and he announced that we had won the Perrier Award and handed it to us. And there were people waiting in our dressing room from the BBC asking if they could show our review on BBC Two. And then the next night, some people from ITV, which developed into a series with Robbie Coltrane and Ben Elton. And I mean, I sort of resist telling this story because it casts me as the luckiest bastard in the world. And we were. It's as if sometimes, and I've heard younger comics and actors saying this, that they could almost see the door closing in the 1980s and 90s. On that sort of thing, you know, a graduate comedy from, especially from Oxbridge, just waltzing into the BBC.
I think it's great. I'm so grateful that I grew up watching what you chaps were doing and that was the cornerstone of comedy for me. And growing up and seeing, it's extraordinary because I was old enough to really laugh and really understand the jokes. But then to go on and see what everybody did, what Emma did, what Hugh Laurie did, what you have done, what Rowan has done, what Simon Curtis has done, it's so inspiring because that's all I wanted to do was be a performer, but I didn't have a gang. I always wished I'd had a gang.
I was about to say, when I'm asked, and as I'm sure you are, by young drama students or teenagers hoping to go into some aspect of the performing arts, asked to give advice, I can only say cluster around your friends who have a similar ambition and make your own shows, make your own whatever it is, and get your friends to come and watch them. Because the more you perform, even if it's barely to any kind of paying audience, but the more you do it, the more you get the confidence and the self-belief and the idea in your head that you're allowed to, you know, because, you know, we all grew up watching these glamorous figures. You know, I saw Peter Cook and John Cleese on The Parkinson Show or Peter Sellers or whoever it might be, and they were behind the glass in every sense. The idea that one could even tread any aspect of their boards, as it were, was just out of sight. And slowly, because of writing with friends and kind of finding out how audiences behave and feeling that one belongs on a stage, it gives one this fabulous idea that you could be part of that huge family of people who are the clowns, the circus and the entertainers.
Yeah. I was constantly deputising dolls to be my audience and they always loved everything I did.
Of course.
It was a standing ovation every time.
As my mother used to say when I used to get my brother to do plays behind a curtain as well. And my mother used to say, without being aware of the preposterousness of the remark, you were both the best thing in it.
That's so... You know what? My mother actually said something somewhat similar after a particularly obscure film that I'd done. And she was like, gosh, you know, both people who see that will love it.
AI might be the most important new computer technology ever. It's storming every industry, and literally billions of dollars are being invested. So buckle up. The problem is that AI needs a lot of speed and processing power. So how do you compete without costs spiraling out of control? It's time to upgrade to the next generation of the cloud. Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is a single platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, and AI needs. OCI has 4 to 8 times the bandwidth of other clouds, offers one consistent price instead of variable regional pricing, and of course, nobody does data better than Oracle. So now you can train your AI models at twice the speed and less than half the cost of other clouds. If you want to do more and spend less like Uber, 8x8, and Databricks Mosaic, take a free test drive of OCI at oracle.com/strategic. That's oracle.com/strategic. Oracle.com/strategic.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV, and be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light. Catch all 7 rounds, 3 days, live from Detroit, April 25th to 27th, with NFL Network Draft coverage presented by Verizon, and on ABC, ESPN, ESPN Deportes, and streaming on NFL Plus. It all starts Thursday, April 25th at 8 p.m. Eastern. Visit NFL.com/draft for more information. Rocket Mortgage, official partner of the NFL Draft.
Ready? Okay. Give me a beach.
Beach.
Give me great food.
Tacos.
Give me adventure.
Hiking.
Give me a date night.
Sunset cruise.
Give me some smiles.
Cheese.
Give me more beaches.
Beaches.
What's that spell?
San Diego.
If you're happy and you know it, San Diego is the place to show it. Book your trip at sandiego.org. Funded in part with the City of San Diego Tourism Marketing District Assessment Funds.
What relationship, real or fictionalized, defines love for you? In fact, will you say real and fictionalized? Because I want to hear about lovers and defining love with fictionalized characters as well as the real one.
Well, I think first love is fictional love to some extent.
Oh, good one.
It's so overwhelming. Its expectations are so high. It consumes the self. It becomes so obsessive and infatuated. And when I was 14 and a half, 15, I fell in love with a boy at school. And I had no idea that I was capable of feeling such things. They weren't erotic. They're part of them, I suppose, must obviously have been erotic, but they were mostly to do with beauty and lyricism and absolute devotion. And every waking moment was concerned with trying to follow the path that I thought he would be taking between this school block and that school block, or he had games that day, and so he'd be, you know, be on the rugby field at this time or cricket field at that time. And, you know, my whole life was devoted to it. And I suddenly realized that the thing I had hated as a child, this propensity of films to wander off into kissing scenes when there was a good adventure going on. What, Mummy, why are they kissing? You know, the Germans are around the corner and they suddenly, he's looking down into her face and they're smooching and wasting time. And what's it all about? It just struck, and all song lyrics were loving you. I mean, the Beatles were around. You know, my 7th birthday treat was to go and see A Hard Day's Night. You know, and I loved that. There was none of that soppiness. But the lyrics were all She Loves You and Love, 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 and All You Need Is Love, and Love This, and Love That. And it made no sense. And the poems one was being taught at school were all about love. Then suddenly it hit me that it was the only thing in the world that mattered, that nothing else had any significance at all except this absolute loss of self into the idea of someone else. And this understanding of why beauty was so important. And it translated into a great sort of dippy adoration of spring and trees and blossom and birds.
Did you ever get to tell him that you loved him?
He knew. I never quite expressed it in those ways.
I think it was probably quite hard to hide it.
We had a little rumpy-pumpy tussle in the grass once, and that was...
Oh, good. Oh,
good.
But that was fictional in as much as it belonged to a Petrarchian idea of ideal love, or a Shakespearean sonnet idea, or whatever. You know, it was absolutely nothing to do with what I now think of as love, which is naturally me and my husband, which is contentment, companionship. Yes, I mean, all the joy of our first meeting and realizing we were soulmates and made for each other, and the happiness and the extra special pleasure that it coincided exactly with the time when we could get married legally in this country, which was fabulous.
I think that's rather a good trajectory to begin with, a fictionalized reality, and to wind up in really something, you know, the marriage between two men or two women was a complete fiction until very recently. I think that's a wonderful path to have begun in that place and to have wound up in this other place. I think that's a beautiful bookend. And we should all be so lucky. And that you got Rumpy Pumpy out of the fact that it was actualized, that this ideal devotion of, you know, sneaking around buildings, staring at your love, that it actually materialized into the long grass makes me very happy.
It made me happy too, as you can imagine. Though underneath it was the misery of the realization that for him it might have been an amusing episode, but for me it was part of what I absolutely instinctively understood was my nature, which was that I would only ever fall in love with people of my own sex, and that I was never going to be therefore accepted by society, because that same knowledge had driven me to the library, because in those days, of course, there was no online, there was no affirmation or vindication of sexuality available, except in the forbidden byways of literature, not pornography, but stories like Oscar Wilde's Trial, or various other people exiled to Morocco and Capri and the Mediterranean generally, where a slightly more louche lifestyle was acceptable. And otherwise, it was skulking in shadows. And it was, you know, it was the terrible fear of the police courts and shame.
Did you think of that at 14 and 15 when you first fell in love?
I was aware that my whole interior life would have to be a secret. At least I thought that would be a secret that I would never be able to share with anyone except through books, you know, and for all the horrors we attribute to social media and email and the whole digital world now, had that been available to me, it would have completely altered the way I felt, because I would have been more instantly to discover that I was not alone.
Yes.
And that I was not criminal. I was not creepy. I was not a pervert who should be punished. Because I knew that although sex was important, it was really love that was the massive thing. And that's, of course, what has been allowed by this acceptance and legislation and everything, is people can love each other, you know?
Yeah, exactly. What is the quality you like least about yourself?
I give answers that people could get very annoyed by because they sound like false modesty or absurd expectations. But I know that as far as other people are concerned, I'm not lazy, and yet I still feel lazy in myself. I still feel there's always more I could do. And my husband is driven crazy by my need not to see a single red notification badge in my email box. I have to have answered everything. I have to have done the thank you letters and the bread and butter letters, and I have to be on top of things. And I always say to him, it's because I so hate it, I want to get it out of the way. I'm the same with washing up or anything. It's a peculiar...
But that seems like a very good thing. That doesn't seem like a bad thing at all. I wish I did the washing up.
No, I know it's not a bad thing. That it annoys me that I'm so anxious about it, and I can't be more relaxed. But you're right, it's not the thing I hate about myself most. I think my anxiety to please, my inability to rest until I feel that everybody is unoffended by me, possibly even likes me or is pleased with me, and doesn't come away with a wrong idea about me, or what I think is a wrong idea about me. And I'm aware that this desire to please is transparent. That's to say, others can see it. I mean, I've actually happened. I don't seek them out, but I've happened on the odd phrase online or in the press saying his, you know, overwhelming desire to be liked or whatever. And I think, yeah, they're right. And it's, you know, the people I most like aren't like me. I suppose that's the way I should put it. That, you know, they, it's not that they absolutely don't care a hoot what people think about them and are sort of quite happy to be cruel and unkind or, you know, dismissive or not to answer letters or whatever. It's not that. It's just that it doesn't seem to possess them quite as it does me. I don't know where it comes from. But it's a desire to please. It's that little Jack Horner, what a good boy am I sort of thing that I know is very obvious in me.
Well, I think you're great.
You see, I've won.
You've done it. Oh, God. Cross that off the list. Tick. At least until tomorrow.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light.
With the first pick in the NFL Draft.
Catch all 7 rounds, 3 days, live from Detroit. April 25th to 27th with NFL Network Draft coverage presented by Verizon and on ABC, ESPN, ESPN Deportes, and streaming on NFL Plus. It all starts Thursday, April 25th at 8 p.m. Eastern. Visit NFL.com/draft for more information.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit RightRug.com. That's RiteRug.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Awards Watch says Liam Neeson is at his best. Don't miss In the Land of Saints and Sinners. Having left his dark past behind, retired hitman Finbar Murphy, played by Neeson, leads a quiet life in a remote coastal Irish town. But when a menacing crew of terrorists arrive, Finbar is drawn into a vicious game of cat and mouse, forcing him to choose between exposing his secret identity or defending his friends and neighbors. In the Land of Saints and Sinners, from Samuel Goldwyn Films and Sony Pictures Home Entertainment. Watch it now on digital. Rated R.
What person, place, or experience has most altered your life?
Well, I think I would go back to an occasion. My parents grew up in the country in quite a large house. It's not Dunton Abbey, but it was big. And it was very old-fashioned. It wasn't on the mains water. We had a sort of pump house somewhere in the back to pump up the water. And the bread man would come on a horse and cart when I was young. It was a very rural and peculiar and fun sort of life, I suppose, to grow up in. But one thing my parents did not like was television. There was one kept in a cupboard somewhere. It was a tiny little thing. And if a member of the royal family married or got or died, or Winston Churchill's funeral, say, or the moon landing, the television would be got out and sat in a corner and told to behave itself and then put away again. But occasionally, my father, the stable block of the house had been converted to a laboratory for my father. It's a physicist, inventor sort of figure. And so he would sometimes spend days over there. He'd be like Sherlock Holmes, you know, just completely lost amongst his equipment. And then I would, especially if it was raining and there was nothing else to do, I would take the television out and secretly watch it. One afternoon, a Sunday afternoon, I turned it on and something had just started and people were talking to each other in the most extraordinary way. I'd never heard anything like it. It wasn't Shakespeare, but it wasn't contemporary. I was not old enough to recognise it, but I was old enough to recognise that it was stunning. And I watched it with my mouth open because of the way people were speaking. And it finished with a curtain dropping. So the camera had sort of been inside in it, a real world. And then at the end, it pulled back and the curtain fell as if to suggest that it was a play. So I rushed off to see my mother. And there was a particular line in it. You know how something, when a movie is really good, you remember almost every detail of it. And when a movie is colossal garbage, you cannot remember a single scene away. And I remembered so much of this, just watching it once, including this speech, where a man, whom I subsequently discovered was the actor Michael Denison, says to a woman, whom I subsequently discovered was the actress Dorothy Tutin, he said, "I hope I will not in any way offend you if I say that you seem to me to be the visible personification of absolute perfection." And I thought that was the most extraordinary line I'd ever... And it was funny because, of course, if you declare love to someone, you don't use Latinate words like visible personification of absolute perfection. You say, "I love you, you're gorgeous," you know, that's what... But, and yet it was a beautiful compliment and courtly. And so I ran to my mother and said, "Mother, I hope I shan't offend you if I say that you seem to me to be in every way the visible personification of absolute perfection." She said, "What are you talking about?" I said, "I've seen this thing," and I explained it. She said, "Oh, that was the importance of being earnest." And I said, "Well, what is it?" And she explained it was a play. Now, we were so deep in the country that we're miles, as Sidney Smith once said, simply miles from the nearest lemon. But we were also miles from the nearest library. And so what had in those days, I don't know if they still do, this little grey van. The kind that would be called a pantechnicon.
A van like that, a library van, yeah.
A mobile library, yeah. And it would come to, there was a crossing of the roads about a quarter of a mile from our house, two lanes met, and it would stop there on Thursday afternoons.
Would you wait for it?
Yeah, I waited for it on the corner, and the driver got out and wheezed his way round the front bonnet and opened the side door, let down the steps and patted my bottom I went into the library.
Off it goes, Sonny.
And there was a little lady in there with powdery soft cheeks and little, you know, little glasses on a chain. And I asked her if she had The Importance of Being Earnest by Mr. Oscar Wilde. She gave me this collection of his comic plays. Four of them, Woman of No Importance, Ideal Husband, and Lady Vandermeer's Wind.
Love Lady Vandermeer's Wind.
I got those. And I read them I kept them for the week, and I read until I knew The Importance almost off by heart. I could still quote most of it. And I just fell in love with the language. And then I went back and I said, "Have you got any more by this writer?" And she stamped out a new book, The Complete Works of Oscar Wilde. I took them home and I read these fairy stories, these amazing stories about the Happy Prince and the Young King and all these. And some I didn't understand. There were some very sort of grown-up essays like The Soul of Man Under Socialism and one which we should be reading now called The Truth of Masks.
Yes.
Very appropriate. And then I went back the next week and I said, "Have you got any more?" And she said, "Well, if that's the complete works, that's probably the complete works." And I said, "Oh." And
oh,
so I
no.
started to look round, and then I saw a book called The Trials of Oscar Wilde by a man called L. Montgomery Hyde. She said, "I'm not sure that's appropriate for you." And I said, "No, I'm studying this writer." You know, I was sort of 11 or something.
I'm not sure.
So she stamped it out, let me read it. And there I read about this extraordinary man, his warmth, his generosity, his wit, his gift, genius for friendship. And then I kind of lived with him as he was pulled down into the greatest and most terrible scandal of the Victorian age and ended up in Paris, despised and rejected of men, as Isaiah puts it, and died a miserable death thinking he would be perhaps forgotten or always in disgrace in men's eyes. And it just took the wind out of my sails because I knew that I had that thing in me, that the reason he was pulled down would be the reason I might too.
Mm.
This belief that I'd never be accepted. So there was, on the one hand, there was the joy of discovering literature and how language can, because Minnie, I can't dance, I can't paint, draw, you know, I'm not athletic. Those ways people have of expressing joy and delight and texture and thrill, all for me are in words proceeding out of my mouth or put on a page. And in our culture, not uniquely, I think, we're not encouraged to believe that language, which is the gift we all share, unless there's a very strong dysfunction, is not just for saying pass the mustard and where's the toilet, but it is actually something that can be used to entrance and delight and seduce and beguile and thrill and deceive and create as much art as a paintbrush or a cello can, just in the sound of the tongue hitting the back of the teeth. There's a beauty and a majesty and a glory. It's one of the reasons I admire people like Eminem and some of the great hip-hop artists is because they have brought language really back into popular art in a strong way. And Oscar was the first to do that. He lit that light and many other things. So I think everything flowed from that, if you will. It woke me up. That's what lit a fire in me that still burns.
Oh, Stephen, I love that so much. I had Orson Welles reading The Selfish Giant on a record that I listened to when I was about 5 or 6. And I used to...
This is my garden.
It is so brilliant. Anyone find it, everybody should listen to it.
The children are my flowers. Yes, it's glorious. I only have to hear those and I can smell an old-fashioned gramophone and the records that went on it. You know that dusty smell as it warmed up and the little crackle?
Join me next week for the second half of my conversation with Stephen Fry. Mini Questions is hosted and written by me, Minnie Driver. Supervising producer, Aaron Kaufman. Producer, Morgan Lavoie. Research assistant, Marissa Brown. Original music, Sorry Baby, by Minnie Driver. Additional music by Aaron Kaufman. Executive produced by me, Minnie Driver. Special thanks to Jim Nicolay, Will Pearson, Addison O'Day, Lisa Castella and Anique Oppenheim at WKPR, De La Pescador, Kate Driver and Jason Weinberg, and for constantly solicited tech support, Henry Driver.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light. Catch all 7 rounds, 3 days, live from Detroit, April 25th to 27th, with NFL Network Draft coverage presented by Verizon, and on ABC, ESPN, ESPN Deportes, and streaming on NFL Plus. It all starts Thursday, April 25th at 8 p.m. Eastern. Visit NFL.com/draft for more information. Presented by Bud Light. Easy to drink, easy to enjoy.
Let's clear out winter and clean up the lawn with Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. Right now, get the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and make your lawn work easier with a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power. And with convenient online shopping, you can order on the app, pick up in store, and get outside sooner. Get your yard spring ready with the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower, now just $89 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles, ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RiteRug.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.